Welcome to this portion of Vocal Points. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Keisha Russell of First Liberty, First Liberty Institute. Their organization stands for religious freedom, and their president and founder, Kelly Shackelford, said recently, in nominating Ketanji Brown Jackson, President Biden is selecting a judicial activist for the Supreme Court. And we'll say more of his quote later in this segment, but let's go ahead and introduce Keisha Russell of First Liberty. Thank you, Keisha, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Okay, now President Biden, true to his word, said he would nominate a black woman to the U.S. Supreme Court. Critics note that, gosh, did he have to choose the most radical of those black women that were under consideration? But what is your initial thought about Ketanji Brown Jackson?
Well, I definitely think some of the other nominees were probably just as radical, if not more. But, you know, I think Judge Jackson has sort of the pedigree of some of the Supreme Court justices, you know, having graduated from Harvard and been a clerk for Justice Breyer. And, of course, now she's sitting on the bench for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a common precursor to the Supreme Court. However, I think most of the Republicans are going to concentrate on probably her biggest weakness, which is her reversal record as a district court judge. She's only written, I think, two opinions on the Court of Appeals. She's only been on that for a year, but prior to that, on the district court bench, she wrote many opinions and was reversed at about a little over a 10% rate, which is pretty high for a federal judge.
Okay, what does that exactly mean? In other words, she would write an opinion and then ultimately would work its way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no, you're out of line, this is not constitutional what you've written. Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah. Well, even more precisely, as a district court judge, so D.C. District Court, she would be reversed by the D.C. Court of Appeals, just the court right above her, where notably most of the justices share her ideology. It's a mostly Democratic-appointed panel, and many of those judges would reverse her, which indicates that, you know, they feel that she got the law wrong, even if it was an issue politically that maybe they didn't agree with the outcome. And so many Republicans are going to point to the fact that that might indicate that she's a proponent of judicial activism, which really means that you will twist the law in order to get the outcome that you want, even if it doesn't completely comply or comport with the Constitution.
Well, your boss, Kelly Shackelford, says this: her record from the beginning of her career shows hostility to religious liberty, free speech, and other constitutional rights. Could you go ahead and elaborate on that?
Well, yeah. I mean, in one of her previous judicial hearings, she talked about church autonomy doctrine, which really just says how churches can govern the structure of their churches and what they can do. And she had a pretty limited view of church autonomy. She basically said it only included the right for churches to hire, you know, ministers, but it's a much broader doctrine than that. We also know that she wrote an amicus brief, co-authored an amicus brief for the National Abortion Rights Action League, and in it, she supported the creation of free speech buffer zones, which was just outside abortion clinics, and she basically wrote that abortion clinic workers could speak to pregnant women, but pro-life advocates could not in these zones, and we know that those zones are obviously very problematic under the free speech clause of the First Amendment. So those are just a few things that I think would point to that, not to mention the fact that she's, you know, supported by many anti-religious groups, American atheists, et cetera, and those groups don't support you unless they think you're going to be favorable to their causes.
Hmm. Okay, and then continuing with Kelly Shackelford, he says, if confirmed, Judge Jackson's judicial activism will place the constitutional rights of all Americans in jeopardy. What exactly does judicial activism mean, and why does Kelly say that our rights would be in jeopardy if she gets on the Supreme Court?
So judicial activism means that instead of being a neutral arbiter of the law and just interpreting the law as it's written, and making sure that the outcome is neutral, that you are an activist for your political or cultural position. So you may, in fact, twist the Constitution's meanings or the laws in order to make sure that the outcome of the opinion satisfy your political position. So a more common example would be, like, if you look at some of the abortion opinions, this is a common conservative critique of the abortion opinions, that they really don't comport with any constitutional rights at all, that they really misinterpret the Constitution only because the justices wanted to reach a certain opinion, and they wanted to reach a certain outcome. And that's what Kelly's talking about here, that judges who are willing to skirt the law or misinterpret certain things are really after political outcomes and not neutral outcomes.
You know, that's a really good point. I once took the trouble to read Roe v. Wade, the whole thing, and I was struck by many things. But one thing that did strike me is, okay, the only part of the Constitution that they cited in that were the Ninth and the 14th Amendments. So I looked at the Ninth and I looked at the 14th Amendments, and I thought, my goodness, only lawyers with, you know, twisting language could come up with the idea that somehow the Ninth and the 14th Amendment supported abortion on demand. I mean, I'm serious. I mean, there's not even anything there, mm-hmm. of course, about abortion. There's nothing there about mm-hmm. pregnancy. There's nothing there about even the right to privacy. It's only in the numbers or the penumbras or something like that. I mean, it's not there. So it's like, they're just making this stuff up. What's going on here? I know you're a lawyer, and I don't mean to insult you, you know, as a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer, but and I don't even play one on TV. But tell us, you know, how do they come up with these things?
Well, I mean, and that's what judicial activism really means, because that right is not in the Constitution. And even people who are pro-abortion will look at those opinions as being poorly written and contain poor analysis, because they are very weak in terms of the constitutional interpretation. But that is something that, you know, conservatives are always concerned with when it comes to Democratic appointees, because they're more likely to interpret the Constitution that way, very liberally, and in a way that doesn't really justify any of the original meanings of the words and the provisions in the Constitution.
Now, what about religious liberty? I mean, the Constitution is explicit on the point of religious liberty, and yet the judicial activists, it seems to me, limit religious liberty in truth, or in you know, in their various rulings.
Yeah, definitely, and I think it's especially over the last 10 years, you can really see the more religion clashes with the culture, the more judges and justices seem to want to narrowly interpret the very broad protection, I think, that's in the First Amendment related to religious liberty. I mean, and as it relates to Judge Jackson, she indicated in one of her Judiciary Committee hearings that she believes schools could discriminate against students and teachers on the basis of their speech. And, you know, I think that really implicates, for example, First Liberty has a case right now before the Supreme Court about Coach Kennedy, which is a high school football coach who was fired for taking a knee and saying a brief quiet prayer at football games, after the games. So it was like a prayer of thanks and gratitude. And his school district fired him for that. So we were just granted cert at the Supreme Court. And this is one case, for example, that we would be concerned about how she would rule on that case. I mean, the Ninth Circuit said that coaches and teachers have no First Amendment rights if students can see them, which is outrageous. That's an outrageous misinterpretation of the First Amendment. And that is one of the cases, I think, that would really, I think, show what she believes about free speech and particularly free exercise.
Now, it's very interesting when it comes to the difference between the way Democrats and the left deal with, let's say, potential conservative nominees to the Supreme Court versus the way, Republicans deal with, let's say, radical leftists who are appointed to the Supreme Court. I mean, I think about Robert Bork. His name even became a word in our language. You know, to bork somebody is to basically sink their candidacy, frankly, through a lot of charges. Then, and over time, those charges did not prove to be correct at all. I mean, it was basically a bunch of lies, but it borked him and kept him off the high court.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the filibuster for judicial nominees is gone now, right? So there isn't a lot that Republicans or Democrats can do when the president appoints a justice. The only thing you can do at this point is really try to expose the weaknesses in the judge's judicial philosophy. And if you recall, the way the Democrats treated Justice Barrett when she was in her hearings, really all they could do is challenge her, you know, and conduct these unconstitutional religious tests, unconstitutional under Article 6 of the Constitution, because they were asking her all these questions about her religious beliefs as it relates to abortion and all kinds of things that really only demonstrated where, you know, where their minds were in terms of how they want her to rule on certain cases. And she was very clear that, you know, she is dedicated to interpreting the Constitution as it was written. And so you can expect sort of the opposite from the Republicans here, really kind of focusing on Judge Jackson's judicial philosophy, her way of interpreting the Constitution and her way of interpreting Americans' constitutional rights.
But there really is a level of unfairness that we've seen in vitriol. Again, Bork, Clarence Thomas, look at Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, that poor guy, where does he go to get his reputation back? I mean, basically, there was no corroboration for the terrible accusations made against Brett Kavanaugh, and yet to this day, there's probably millions of people who have questions about his integrity and his, you know, his decency and, you know, as a human being, even.
Yeah, certainly the attacks from the Democrats for nominees are more vicious in nature, I would say. Republicans tend to focus more on sort of the, like I said, the judicial philosophy. So you're right that there seems to be a very, very different tactic that the Democrats use as opposed to the Republicans, certainly. I don't expect that the Republicans will attack Judge Jackson in that way, just because that's not typically the way they conduct their questions. But I can bet that the next time there's a Republican president in mind and he's nominating a justice, that we'll see a very different version of the Democrats.
Okay, so where do conservatives go from here? We have about 2 minutes left. And by the way, the Constitution says that the Senate is allowed to advise and consent whatever nominees to the courts that the president will choose.
Yeah, so now what happens is, you know, there will be a hearing at some point with lots of questions. And, you know, Justice Barrett was confirmed within about 30 days. So Judge Jackson, depending upon how quickly the Biden administration wants to move, you could probably see that happen within the next 30 to 60 days. And that's pretty much how it'll go. There's really, like I said, not much Republicans can do to stop this process. She's likely to get 100% of the Democratic vote. And her hearings for the D.C. Court of Appeals, she was able to get a few Republican votes even. I'm betting that probably won't happen this time because there will be a much higher level of scrutiny for the Supreme Court than there is for a Court of Appeals, even if it is the D.C. Circuit.
Okay, so if she gets in, then what would that mean for the makeup of the court? We have about a minute to go.
Okay, so the makeup of the court really won't change. Right now it's 6-3 conservative, if you still consider Roberts a conservative. And,
big
you
if.
Know, Judge Jackson is replacing another liberal. So, Justice Breyer is a liberal justice. And so because she's replacing him, that will not change the numbers or the makeup of the court.
I do remember one time there was a two-pronged decision related to the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court. And Justice Breyer, surprisingly, on the one hand, he voted against the Ten Commandments, but on the other hand, he voted one part of the prong of the Ten Commandments he voted for. And I always made me wonder, wow, what's... I never understood even the difference between the two. You know, one is maybe outside and the other was inside, but I don't know. In any event, firstliberty.org for more information. Keisha, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Absolutely. Thank you.